I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. If this is your first time hearing our show, I've got good news. It's based on a really simple idea that all of us have had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of this with us, so please tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us and tell us about your nominations. Send them in to teacherslounge@niu.edu. Today on the show, it's Dr. Noor Al-Naber. She's a business professor at Waubonsie Community College, and her husband run two wine and liquor retail stores, so the examples she brings her students are not hypothetical, and she wants her business and marketing students to start getting real-world experience right away by partnering with local businesses. Noor also shares a lot about herself, her journey coming to the U.S. from Jordan.
I talk about myself as a person who, as an immigrant, I came to the USA in 2005, and with my husband, my son back then, I was struggling. English is not my first language. I am proud to say about my story. I'm proud to talk about my struggle when I started here, financial struggle, because they're also struggling.
It's all to help build real, lasting relationships with her students. Relationships that grow through extracurriculars, like their business club, where they have students compete in national entrepreneurial competitions through Skills USA, where last year, their Waubonsie team won the whole thing.
Our students were amazing, and Andy and I, we were so happy. We were like jumping in the air.
We talk about that, her passion for international relations, building spaghetti towers, and so much more. But first, we have one more education story we want to share. Public school enrollment in Illinois is down 10% over the past decade. That is 200,000 fewer K-12 students. So how is that hitting school districts?
Why are you trying to shut down our schools? You are taking away my friends, and that makes me sad. I love my school.
Jessica Polhill reads a note written by her son, who's in elementary school.
Sorry, what are you doing to our schools?
It's at an emotional public forum a few months back when the Harlem School District was weighing whether it should shutter two elementary schools, Maple and Olson Park. And in January, the board voted to close them. Schools closing isn't super common, but it does happen. Data from the State Board of Education shows 72 public schools have closed in the past 5 years. And not all of them have boarded up completely. Some were repurposed, like an elementary school becoming a preschool. And one of the main reasons for closures in Harlem was enrollment. Administrator Jason Bloom says it peaked around 2007, and it's been downhill ever since, around 18% in the past two decades.
So we've known for a long time this is something that we need to do.
But why now? Well, declining enrollment is significant, but also significant is the district's projected $3 million budget deficit. That's why the schools will close after this school year. They need to cut costs now.
The projections that we had for this upcoming year definitely played into probably expediting this a little bit.
Unfortunately, when they talk about cutting costs, the savings doesn't come from just closing a building.
The money that we save when we close schools comes from the staff. Like, it's not the operations, it's not the necessary utilities.
Staff will lose their jobs, and it's not exactly clear how many yet. And some Harlem teachers say the process just moved too quickly. Early childhood teacher Katie Fowler says they heard their jobs might be on the chopping block at the same time as the rest of the public.
I think we were all pretty dismayed, yeah. It was, yeah, a lot of disappointment and a lot of frustration and just like lack of transparency.
It made a tough sell to the community even tougher. Closing any school is painful. Schools give a town or a neighborhood a sense of identity. It's where childhood memories are made. So this process is a science and an art. How do you explain why a tough decision like this is necessary in a way that maintains trust? Margot Empin knows about that. She's the superintendent at the Dixon School District, and in the face of enrollment declines, they closed down an elementary school 10 years ago, one she taught at.
There are still people who, you know, still feel it was not the right choice.
She says communicating with families during that time was crucial, and Dixon is still dealing with long-term enrollment declines. They've fallen about 14% since 2018, which is twice the state average. And Empen says, for them, it's not an urgent five-alarm fire. It's something they monitor over years and try to get out in front of before it becomes an emergency.
What I would say is that we've been experiencing our smaller tweaks.
They also switched from having neighborhood schools, which means students mostly attend the elementary school closest to their house, to grade level centers, which means there's one school for second and third grade, one for fourth and fifth, and so on. You know, neighborhoods don't grow or shrink evenly across a town, so when you have neighborhood schools like Harlem, enrollment can fall a lot at some schools and not at all at others. In Harlem, Jason Bloom says they have some schools with class sizes of 16 and others around 25, and some schools that held 450 kids now hold 250. In the end, Harlem voted to keep their neighborhood school model because they heard over and over from families that the long-term connections made at those schools were too important to let go of. But Maple and Olson Park will still close this spring. And statewide, the enrollment decline problem is not going away, and neither are high costs. And Bloom says he thinks Harlem's just the first district in the area to bite the bullet, and that more and more districts could look at closing schools. All right, now it is time for my conversation with Waubonsie Community College business professor, Dr. Noor Al-Naber. We start off talking about what a day in her class is like and teaching her students how to reverse engineer their dream job.
It's not theories. I don't like lecture. For me, lecture is boring. My lectures doesn't exceed the 15 minutes. I always have major case studies. We apply what happened in the USA, what this company did. We learn from other companies' mistakes, and we apply what we learn. I always have students who are struggling. They don't know what they want to do.
Like, it is stressful. Yeah.
It's very stressful. I say it's normal. You're in the right place. Explore many classes, many fields. And for those who really know what they want to do, for example, marketing. My right. students took my marketing classes, and they were like, I tell them from day one, go look at the job description of your dream job.
Yeah.
Look at the minimum qualifications and conduct a SWOT analysis on yourself. What's your strength? What do you bring to the table? Why should the hiring manager hire you instead of someone else? So
it's like reverse engineer your dream job.
Exactly. And I ask them to pause for 15 minutes. Like, I have activities for them throughout the semester because some of them are also still struggling and financially struggling with their family. Family doesn't appreciate education as much as, like, first gen. Some of their parents didn't go through the system, and it's sure. a struggle for them.
Yeah.
Like, do these chores, go work, do other things. Education for some families is not important. Luckily, I was raised in a good environment. My parents loved education. My mom valued education.
Your mom was a teacher, right?
35 years, the last 15 years of her teaching career, she was the principal of the school. So going back to the marketing, I tell them, what's your dream job? Look at the things that you have, your strength and your weaknesses. And it's okay if you have weaknesses. I have weaknesses. I have a doctorate in leadership, and I also have weaknesses. But you have to know and learn how to overcome these weaknesses. Presentation communication skills are really a must for any job now. You have to stand in front of audience and present your project to your manager or sell this product to a customer. You have to develop certain characteristics, and I teach leadership in business, and it's totally online class, and I want also the students to learn leadership traits. I want them to represent their brand really good, and I want them to win any dream job they want. How? is we start building the e-portfolio from day one in the principles of marketing class. The students create their website, any ads commercials they do throughout the semester, any marketing campaign they do, they post it on their website. Mm-hmm. You know how many students who graduate with a bachelor degree in marketing doesn't have an e-portfolio, which is a link to their website that has the resume cover letter and the projects they did throughout the semester. I always talked, my friend, her daughter graduated from a university, I'm not going to mention her name, but she was like telling me, do you know what's the e-portfolio? I was like, yeah, my principals of marketing students know what e-portfolio is. It's a requirement for marketing students. They have to have, beside the resume and the cover letter, they have to submit a link to that e-portfolio. You can't build it in a day.
And there's a lot of places where people go through their whole marketing degree and they don't have a portfolio.
It's sad. It's
strange. I think about that from my lens too, as a journalist, right? Like where I've talked to students who are like seniors and they're like, I've written a lot about journalism, but I haven't done a lot. And I was like, that's kind of the biggest thing that you need to be doing is the actual thing itself.
Yes. So in digital marketing class, my students work with a local business in our district. I have like connected them with many local businesses, reach out to our small business development center. Yeah. And they ask for their help. They can work with an actual business owner, help that business owner promote their business on social media, and they can apply everything they learn throughout the semester. So the entire class has many projects, small pieces to help promote the business or critique what the things that they're doing wrong. How can they increase search engine optimization?
Are we doing a lot of short form vertical video now?
They're working, yes. Yeah. They do social media videos for the businesses and they love it. And we also take the students to Skills USA.
Yeah.
So Professor
Andy, can you tell people what Skills USA is?
For of course. Skills USA is a large competition in the USA. We have a national and a state competition. So our students compete with other community colleges in the entrepreneurship competition.
Yeah.
This is a really big competition. They have, it's a wide range of competitions, firefighters, nurses, early childhood.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff.
All sorts of like career in the USA. They have a competition for each one of them, for the high school students and middle school, I believe, and the college students. So my students compete in the entrepreneurship competition. They write a 30-page so it's almost 60 page because they consider the page one page, but it's two sides. So yeah. 60 pages of business plan for the business. The students create the business. So they identify a gap in the market and they create a product or a service for that gap to meet the need of a specific targeted market. And they create the balance sheet, the cash flow, income statement. They wrote about the executive summary, and they forecast revenue for the next 3 years. They do a lot, to be honest.
Is this something they work on for a long time then?
They have. We select them by December, and they have to compete in April. So within 4 months, they work on creating their business plan, which is we want to teach them that without a business plan, you cannot apply for a loan. You're not trusted if you don't have a business plan. And they select the type of business they want to do. And it's fun for them because four students are working together as four executive leaders, the CFO, CEO. It's so fun for them. I look at them and when they do the presentation and do the PowerPoint slides and they speak together as one team and they present in front of the judges, I give them credit how they dress, how they make their hair, and they're very professional. and they make me so proud of them.
And if that's something that, again, like that, something like that is their dream job, that they get to actually like see themselves in that role, right? Like as a CFO giving that presentation in front of
or the CEO
or whatever, right?
Yeah. So what they do is actually, because this is our third year doing this competition, many students are interested in it. Every year we can take two teams, 8 students and 2 advisors. I'm one of the advisors, and Professor Andy Clements. I'm so lucky to be working with this professional professor. He's amazing, very supportive to the students, want them to succeed, and he wants them to have applicable experience. So we both advise the business club, and this competition is under our budget, the business club budget. So we take the students, the 2 teams. This year we had 6 teams interested. So we had to do our own competition at Wawanzi. The students came, presented. We were the judges.
Because you had so much interest.
More people are interested in the competition and doing their business. Amazing presentations, outstanding. Andy and I, we were struggling with deciding who should go to Peoria and present in April. Yes.
And last year, you had a group that went and won not only the state competition, but the national competition,
yes,
too,
we did.
Right?
We actually did. We were so lucky in 2025. Our students were amazing. And Andy and I, we were so happy. We were like jumping in the air. And it's amazing. Great feeling. I really want all the professors to do those volunteer activities with the students, because this is what the students need, applicable experience.
It feels like those experiences a lot of times stand out and stick with students even more than what happens in the classroom.
Exactly. We take them out. The college covers breakfast, lunch, dinner. We learn about them. They learn about us. We talk. It's a great experience. I'm so thankful for Wawanzi. The leadership here is amazing, very supportive. Dr. Knuttel is always supporting this competition. We take many students from Wawanzi to do different type of competitions at the state and the national level every year.
What was the business plan? Like, what was the one that won?
Oh, ours, I'm not sure if I can reveal, but
okay,
this is the
reveal.
Team.
That's
their
okay.
picture over there. Actually, this team started with 2 students who did the sustainability competition with UIC and University of Illinois. It's actually a worldwide competition, and this student won 2nd between 200 students.
From around the world.
Around the world, yeah. So it started with the 2 students, their idea, and they built on the idea of eco-friendly product to save the environment from plastic.
Yeah.
And very unique product. Their presentation was outstanding. They won the sustainability competition in November, and then in April they won Peoria, and in June they won the state. When I looked at them, look at these students, young adults, speaking a professional language, made me like all the effort, all the time we spent together. Honestly, they texted me in the middle of the night. They're working on the business plan. And I was replying in the middle of the night. And I was like, my husband was like, go sleep. I was like, no, I have to reply to this message, then I'll sleep. I love them. They're amazing. I really care about their success. And they graduated. 2 of them graduated. They're not here anymore. But yet Andy and I, we took them for lunch and we met with them in the fall. It's very important to develop this long experience with this long relationship experience with the students. I want them to connect with me because I want to help them later on in life if they want me to write them a letter of recommendation or anything. Yeah.
That's so important. And like, talk about leadership communication skills they're learning. I think that every student craves having some kind of mentor or having some kind of adult or professor in their life who's, you know, can give them advice or help them along in their career path. But sometimes they don't feel confident enough to ask for help or ask like, hey, can you talk with me about this? Can you give me advice on something? So that's something that I'm sure leadership also helps with, is knowing how and having the confidence to be able to ask for help.
Yeah. So many students are shy or have anxiety. So I do the check mood in the first class, and I say, here the survey, I wouldn't see your name, but after we're done with the survey, I ask them if you have like special needs, you want me, you're shy to talk in front of your friends, come talk to me after the class or before the class. These are my office hours, connect with me. I really care about your success. They see from day one, I have slides. I talk about myself as a person who, as an immigrant, I came to the USA in 2005 and with my husband, my son back then. And I was struggling. English is not my first language. So I tell them, because I have so many students, English is not their first language. I tell them, it's okay. I was there one day. It's okay, but we have to put goals. We need to write smart goals for ourselves. We have to know when we need to reach this specific goal. I want to have a bachelor's degree, but when? You have to hold yourself accountable for this goal with time tie to the goal. I need to graduate by 2027. And then you don't put it on hold. You need to evaluate yourself to see if you're on track or not on track.
You need to have a plan.
You need to have a plan. And this is what we do in management. You have to have smart goals. You need to have plans. And you need to know how to manage your time. We're lucky here, again, at Waubonsie. We have coaches. I can embed a coach in the class, and she can, like, see if somebody's struggling with their grades. I already reach out to them, but she has better experience in that area. It's her specialty, and she'll meet with the students on one-on-one if they don't know how to manage their time or they're struggling. She'll help them how to, tips for studying. Mm-hmm. It's her field. So it's amazing that I can embed someone in the course, and the students trust her. I trust her. Going back with the connection between the faculty and the students, it's important from day one for the professor to talk about their self. It's not only about education. The students need to know the professor as a human outside the classroom. They want to know you. They want to know your story. So I am proud to say about my story. I'm proud to talk about my struggle when I started here, financial struggle, because they're also struggling. It's okay to share those challenging times with the students throughout the semester. Doesn't waste the class time. It doesn't sometimes take 3 minutes, but they know that you're there for them. You're there to help them, and you care about their success.
Yeah, and we're all people, and we've all struggled.
Yeah, so they're open to come and talk to you. So I also have in the courses sheets for internships opportunities.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we have this opportunity. Somebody reached out to our internship department, and we have updated the list. Take advantage. Someone needs somebody to edit the website for them. I want always to connect one student at least with this opportunity, the opportunities that we have, because we have people here at Waubonsie communicating with so many businesses, and one job will open the other doors for you. And this is what happened to me. I tell them the story. I completed my bachelor degree. Yes, I'm a business owner, but my dream job is to be a professor at a community college. I feel like I really need to help the students. I really need to support the students. I treat them as if I'm talking to my own. I want them to succeed the way I want my children to succeed. I have 3 children, and I talk to my students, and I feel like sometimes students listen to me more than my kids. Luckily, somebody's taking listening to my advices.
Yeah.
My kids are amazing, but just joking. So I lost my thoughts.
No, that's okay. I mean, you talked about your background.
Yes.
And what your dream job was.
So my
I wanted to ask you about that too, if we could take a step back. You
sure.
know, talking about you are originally from Jordan. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And about what I knew that you said that your mom was a teacher.
Yes.
And so at the beginning of the conversation, we mentioned how you have a lot of students who maybe don't know necessarily what they want to do when they come into your class. Business teaching, is it something that you always want to do? Like, I'm curious about your journey. Was with your mom as a teacher? Was teaching something that always appealed
she
to you?
She taught or did the science and math. But I really, when I finished my high school, I wanted to work in marketing. So I pursued a bachelor's degree in finance and banking. They convinced me. My parents said, finance and banking is prettier.
Yeah.
You can work in a bank.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. But I was like really in love with marketing.
What made you fall in love with marketing?
I feel like my personality, I'm really good in talking to people. I can sell anything. I can convince people with anything.
Were you selling things as a kid?
I was very polite, very respectful. And my parents always say, like, we like how you talk to the people. You're very respectful, very kind.
Sure.
So I thought, like, I have the traits leadership traits also installed in me since I was, like, young.
Uh-huh.
So I was like,
that
it's going to be...
With a mom as a principal, right?
Yeah. So it's going to be easy for me to, without studying, earn a bachelor degree.
And was it?
No, actually, it was easy for me, to be honest. It was easy for me. But then when I came to the USA, I finished my... since I was in college, I wanted to be a professor. I had, like, a really good professor back then. And he really cared for our success. And he not only taught us, like, subject matter, he taught us good values, how to be a good manager in the future, how to make ethical decisions. And it was like, really, I really need to help with the next generation. I really need to be a professor in the classroom, not only to teach the subject, but like, this is what I do in the classes, especially management. I want them, I say, you're the future managers. We want more responsible managers who care for the environment, for sustainability, make ethical choices. Today we were talking about ethical decisions. I have like those, I don't give them reveal the name of the company, but we do this activity in the classroom and then they guess which company, the name of the company, and they're shocked. Like, we were talking about the largest scheme in the USA, billions of dollars. Netflix movies are exist for a reason. So going back, yes, that was my dream job. I wanted to be a professor. And when I finished my master's degree, I told my students, it's okay even if you do a free internship. I want to tell you what happened to me. I wanted to be a professor. I want to reach that goal. So I contacted Juliet Junior College, Bill O'Connor. He was the chair, and I think he's still the chair at that community college. And I said, hey, I really want to teach a class. Back then, I didn't have teaching experience at the college level. I was teaching Arabic at my church for 7th grade and 8th grade students.
Yeah. But so, mainly you were just a business owner.
So I approached him. I was like, hey, I have an MBA and that's the requirement. I have teaching experience at the middle school level, but I'm really good, good communicator. Can you give me a chance? And he was so kind. He said, I'm going to try you with this class. And if I feel that you're not doing a good job, I'm going to like take it away from you in the middle of the semester. I was like, okay. So he came to me in the first class and he was like, hey, Noor, relax. You're going to be a wonderful professor. go inside and have a positive impact on these lives, on these college students' life. And they did. And they loved me. I loved them. Next semester, he gave me more assignments. And I was teaching the max load for part-time faculty. And I tell the student, if I didn't do that job, it didn't pay much. I was living like at least half an hour away from the college. I paid gas, mileages. And honestly, adjunct faculty doesn't pay much. $2,400, I believe, for an entire semester.
Yeah.
So I told the students, learn from this story one thing. It's okay if it's you don't have enough money and maybe you don't have gas in your car, but do it because it's going to open other doors for you. If I didn't do that assignment the first semester, I wouldn't be hired here at Wawanzi and was highly competitive when we compete for this job. They had so many candidates.
Even when you were a business owner, you were working in management and finance, you knew that your dream job was going to be teaching?
I wanted to be a teacher.
Yeah.
I think I was inspired by my mom.
Yeah.
She was a great teacher.
Was she surprised that when you became a teacher?
No, she knew that I wanted that goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. She always was asking me, because she lives in Jordan and I live in the USA. It's hard, but we communicate always, at least twice a week. So she was always like encouraging when I went to pursue my master. My kids were so young. It wasn't easy for me. Like, I want to take care of my family. I want to take care of my kids. And I want to pursue a master's degree at the same time. Was really hard. Especially I had no family here from my side.
And you mentioned the new language, too.
New language. I knew English overseas, but we don't practice it.
It's different being immersed.
Yeah. But I was lucky. God sent me great people in my life. I'm so thankful. My neighbor was amazing. She always supported me. She always babysat my kids while I was going to my classes. I always had amazing people. Without even asking, somebody would come and answer the question I have. I'm so thankful.
Yeah. And you know, you have a passion for international relations too.
Of course.
That's a big part of what you do. Makes sense with your background too. And I saw you on your bio on Wabanzi's website talking about how, you know, you guys spend a lot of time, you know, educating students about different cultures around the globe and the importance of understanding the behavior of culture before you start a business and interacting with that.
Yes.
I think it's so fascinating, and like especially the importance of like genuine curiosity in international relations and in business too, that there's gonna be so much that you don't know and you have to genuinely be curious about people and culture. And I feel like there are a lot of examples that you see in like business or politics, the stuff that comes with international relationships, where it feels like they're very focused on the money part of it and less so on the people and the culture part of it. But
and like I give them examples in the classroom about large company that is succeeding in the USA, but when they go to India, for example, they fail because they didn't study the culture and understand that they have to change the product itself. You can't sell them cheeseburger. You have to understand that they don't eat beef.
Right.
Simple things. Other companies went to Greece where they printed, they got simple on their product that is going to be in the garbage after the customer is going to consume. And they got offended by those packaging. they thought they're relating to the culture, but in they weren't. So it's very important to understand, like even when conducting a business meeting, if I agree, I shake my hand up and down. Other culture, they shake their head side to side, not up and down. And you're doing a business in an entire country, and you think they disagree with you, but in fact, they're agreeing on every single thing that you do as a business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was business culture in Jordan. Is it very different than business culture in the U.S.?
Of course. Yeah. Yes. It's different. I also take, I always like to travel to different countries. So I like to travel to the Europe. I like to travel around and see the different cultures, even in the Europe, and learn about them. Like some cultures, they at 6 p.m., they close the stores and they go live their lives. We can't do this in the USA. We barely can survive if we're working 24/7.
I know. I actually took my first ever international travel trip last year.
Good.
It's the first time I would ever. And I got the chance to go to Prague in Czechia.
That's nice.
With some family. And it was the same thing where have a lot of, you know, Americans traveling there. Coffee shops don't open until like 10 a.m. in Prague. And so all these Americans, it's like 7 a.m. and they're, what's going on? Why can't I get coffee anywhere? You know? It's just very different.
True. And it's nice to see even McDonald's strategy in Spain versus Italy versus the USA.
Yeah.
It's really good. Yeah. I love giving them examples. So when we talk about marketing strategy for a business, we don't only talk about the USA. We talk about this business and what they're doing, let's say, in Spain or what they're doing in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's, again, it really helps, at least for me, right? That when you have those things that, hey, things look very different in this culture. You could see that, and you could see that as a deficit, as something that you're afraid of, that you don't understand, or you could think of it as an opportunity. This is something I get to learn about. That's like, again, not only building curiosity, but empathy for people around you. It's just, I think it just becomes such a fascinating, fun new thing to learn about different people and different culture.
Yeah.
And there's like a vulnerability that of to being like, I don't know. Can you help me, please? Like, I want to understand this, but I don't right now. And that's, you know, that's maybe a part of leadership, right? That is admitting when you don't know something.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And admitting when you make mistakes is also important.
Yeah.
And apologizing most of the time can solve so many problems. Many leaders, CEO, fail to apologize when their company does harm to the community and say, hey, I wasn't aware of this. I wasn't part of this decision. I feel like leaders need to be accountable for anything happen under their supervision.
Like accountability gets equated with weakness. Sometimes for some business and some leaders just in general too, which is it's a tough thing for everyone. No one wants to admit that they're fun to be wrong, but it's important. One of the questions that we ask everyone on the show is about the teachers they've had in their life who inspire them.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a classroom teacher you had, could be your mom, could be you know, educators that you work with now. Yeah. Is there anyone who just comes to mind immediately?
I'm actually blessed with all the above.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I talked about my mom for so long. So I also want to talk about a professor, Dr. Robinson Eastley, when I was pursuing my master's degree at Governors State University. She was amazing, very understandable. A minority woman who was very supportive to someone like me from a different background. Yeah. And English wasn't her first language, was very kind. She always said, if you need support, I'm here to support you. If you need an extension, I'm willing to give you an extension. When I presented, she always gave me those words to encourage me. Oh, you did a great job. You did this right. I loved this in your presentation. Very supportive to the point, actually, when I was hired here, we were working on professional development for our faculty. And she came and presented here to the Waubonsie faculty during the professional development days and was wonderful. Her presentation was amazing. While I was pursuing my doctorate, I had a class with Dr. Michael Fisher. He actually just published a book on Amazon a couple days ago. I have to send him a text and say congratulations. But he was very kind, very humble. He's not there just to teach and leave. He wanted to connect with the students, and he wanted what best for us. It's not a relationship that ends after the semester. That's what I want to tell the students. Don't fear to be open to don't fear to start relationships with the people around you. Could be your professor, could be your colleague, could be your neighbor. Just be open to share things about yourself and trust the people around you. Lisa's amazing. Dr. Lisa is so amazing. I'm really blessed. So many great people here in this hallway, like intelligent, smart people in this hallway. Amy on the left side, Lisa, Heather, Andy, Stephen. They're all amazing. Professor Dan, Kathy, Catherine, they're all great people to work with.
One of the last questions that we always ask is there something about education or teaching that you just wish more people talked about?
For me, teaching is not, like I said in the past, it's not only teaching your class and leaving.
Yeah.
The connection, helping the students, they really want you to help them. And sometimes they're not open to knock on your door. You have to open the door. You have to initiate the interaction, conversation. It's always we need as educators to remember that our role is to inspire those students. We want them to succeed.
That's lofty too. Inspiration, you know.
Inspire, like that's and we need to make sure that they are on the right track, because it's so easy to get off the track, and it's not easy to be a professor. You get, I'm a highly motivated person, but sometimes motivation leaves me in certain circumstances when I feel like under stress or, but you know, I try to remind myself, like, stay on track. The students need you. Create a fun learning environment. That's my goal. Like, I tell them, like, I'm going to entertain you really well today. We're talking about this topic, but we're going to see this and this and this. And they laugh. I show them, like, I try to make the lecture simple, easy to understand, because some of them, English is not also their first language. So it's very important to make it also engaging. I want them to be part of their learning. And these learners, if I keep lecturing, they get bored. So I put them to work. So I have stations, I have student scenarios. This group is in charge of reading the scenario and be the manager, find a solution for the scenario you have. And then sometimes we have spaghetti marshmallow team building activity. So we have wide range of activities, and even the marshmallow and the spaghetti, they love
spaghetti
it.
Marshmallow together?
Spaghetti marshmallow, yeah. They have to build a tower, and the longest, the tallest tower wins a prize, win a prize, and they compete against each other. Each station has four students. They have to collaborate together on building this spaghetti tower, and it has to be topped with a marshmallow. And hand bag for it.
Do we have a bag of marshmallows over there?
I'm not sure if I throw the marshmallow, but I have like spaghetti.
We got the spaghetti though.
It's fun. I take pictures and they're having fun. I'm having fun. It's a fun learning environment. See, but what do they learn at the end of the day? I need to respect the other person's idea. I need to listen. They need to organize the plan. They have to plan for the tower. They have to work together to make the tower stand. Some ideas fail.
Well, yeah, that was the last question I had for you. This is perfectly jumps off this, which is that I was going to ask you if you had any moments recently that felt very motivating, of something that an activity in the classroom or just an interaction with the student where you're like, this is why I do what I do.
Yeah, every class has an activity.
Yeah.
Every class has to be fun. No boring classes. I really have to enjoy the class. And if I don't enjoy it, I really am so hard on myself. I have to change this activity. This wasn't engaging as I thought it would be. And with a ChatGPT, AI is amazing. I'm utilizing it. I actually did a couple sessions for educators for high school teachers and for professors on how to use ChatGPT to benefit the students.
Generating like ideas for activities and
activities, things? Activities, changing the case study you have, working with the learning outcomes that you have to do, like really great activities. And some activities are good, some activities I throw it in the garbage. And this is how I started doing the sourdough, chatting with ChatGPT. Hey, I have those ingredients. Give me ingredients to do the sourdough.
And luckily, we didn't have to throw the sourdough in the
garbage. No, we don't. So, yeah, we have the airplane activity. The students also sit in stations. We teach them how to do operation management and how they have to also communicate the airplane. It's a simple airplane. And they have to, a paper airplane, they have to create a design. And then once they're done with building their own airplane, they fly it. And the airplane that flies the longest distance is the winning team. Very competitive experience in the classroom. No one sits. I hear all the voices. Everyone's voice is very important. They know that they are very important, important to me, important to the entire class. Any experience you have, talk about it in the classroom. It benefits me. I learn from them. It benefits the other students. We have so many scenarios, sexual harassment, avoid those things and at work, digital monitoring, how they have to also behave while they're working for their company, understanding the company's code of conduct, understanding the mission of their own organization, following the laws, following the handbook, the employee handbook, on simple things like gift given. And gift giving practices in the USA or international business, we talk about all of these topics. It has to be fun, Peter, or otherwise it's going to be boring for all of us.
I was going to say, how can you expect it to be fun for them if it's not fun for you?
Yes, it has to be fun for me first. And we have to understand the generation needs.
Yeah, of course.
The attention span. If I do like 50 minutes lecture, no one is going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes. Sometimes I do 10 minutes, then I do an activity. Then if it's like really important to run another slide for 10 minutes, I do it, then we do another activity.
Yeah.
So just break the long or the large pieces into small pieces so they stay focused on what we're talking about.
When you were in school, was it very lecture heavy?
Was lecture just heavy talking was at you? Boring, sleeping and drawing on the notebook most of the time.
Me too. I was just never good at drawing, you know? You'd think I had a lot of practice.
Me neither.
All right. Well,
yeah.
thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Noor Al-Naber. She's a business professor at Waubonsie Community College, and thank you so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. As always, feel free, please nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Noor. Send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu, and please continue to send us your story ideas so we can keep bringing you the best education coverage possible. Wherever you're hearing this, please subscribe, leave us a rating, share it with a friend. A big thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for the music you hear each and every episode of this show. And I have been your host, Peter Mudlin. This is Teacher's Lounge.